We're going deeper in these sessions on how to communicate and how to understand people's skills, people smart in ministry. We've talked about the unique communication issues that we have, being fallen and sin and the separation of languages, and everybody's so unique and individual. We've also talked in this topic about body language issues. And we also talked previously in this course about listening guidelines, but I want to even go deeper in the listening side here, now that we've talked about some body language issues and communication struggles, to really talk about some practical action guidelines for improved listening so you can even be better and better at people smart in ministry. First thing I want to talk about is some of the common pitfalls that listening can encounter. And that is, like, we're listening, but we're faking that we're understanding. And Robert Bolden talks about some of these things. Though people commonly pretend they are listening attentively and understand perfectly what is being said in these situations, he says, I believe it is important not to be phony. Authenticity demands that the listener admits he is lost. So you're listening to someone, your mind drifts, and then you can just pretend you're listening. No, say, hey, hold on, could you repeat that? And then works to get back on track again. I seem to have lost you. Would you go over that once more? See, do stuff like that. Don't just fake listening. Don't tell the speaker that you know how he feels. That's another pitfall that occurs in advanced listening. First, it is untrue. Our reading of another's feelings is at best an approximation. That's a guess. Remember, we talked about that earlier. We're guessing somewhat. No one can ever fully know what it's like to walk in another person's shoe. Then, too, that statement tends, if you say, oh, I know how you feel, that statement tends to block the speaker's attempt to present the details that would facilitate more specific understanding. Finally, the speaker, if you say, oh, I know how you feel, the speaker tends to doubt that you understand as much as you say you do. So it discredits you as a listener. It is seldom helpful to tell a person that you understand. I understand. Very seldom that is helpful. What is needed is a demonstration that you do, in fact, have some degree of understanding. In other words, you're listening, some feedback, some clues that you are engaged is much more effective than to say, I know how you feel. My aunt did that to me. My father said that. You know, those type of things suggest to someone that, you know, you're just talking about your feelings. This listening is about you. It's not really about them. Bolden talks about varying your response too, you know, and this is just an important technique in listening. So let's say you're dealing, and this is Bolton's example, with a distraught 20-something. Well, you know, instead of, like, saying the one thing over and over again, you might want to say various responses. It bugs you to have your mother interfere so much. You are annoyed that she intrudes in your life. Such an intrusion. When your mother intrudes in your personal life, you feel your independence and privacy are threatened. You wish she'd treat you like a grown-up you are. You hate it that she keeps putting her 2 cents worth in. See, those are all basically saying the same things, but a little differently. When you're listening, vary responses. And part of the varying response benefit for you as a listener is it keeps your mind active. You're not just sort of like, oh, okay, your mother's controlling. Okay, a little bit. What a controlling mother. Oh, controlling mothers like this are common. See, notice that's just sort of monotone in your listening and feedback skills. Continue to always focus on feelings. So in avoid the pitfalls that just move away from what is being felt. When someone is talking, resist the fix-it mentality. There are times for suggestions, but that can be dealt with later. When you're listening, don't have this fix-it mentality. I know for me, sometimes, you know, maybe that's because I'm a guy, you know, sometimes they say men get into the fix-it mentality, But I even know as a pastor, we've seen so much. We've seen so much lack of health, so many problems. So right away we listen and boom, fix it. Fix it now. Fix it right away. And a lot of times it's okay to just listen. Things don't all get fixed all at once all the time. So we want to listen and resist the fix-it mentality. Here's something really important. Choose the most accurate feeling word. And there's a lot of study on this. You know, emotions are key to vital communication. And reflecting emotions is not only important to ascertain the right kind of emotion, but also the right degree of emotion. The feeling word should match the other's experience. Now, here's just a couple of things. If English is your second language, a lot of times when, as a pastor, you're talking in English, if you're talking to a native speaker, you're reflecting words that aren't really having the force within the native language. I mean, that's the same thing for me trying to talk in Swahili. If I'm learning Swahili as a second language or Japanese or another Spanish, a lot of times when you learn another language, you're learning certain words for certain emotions that still are not the feeling word in the native language. So one thing, if English is your second language and you're working with a lot of people in English, you want to really like learn more and more about how to communicate. If you're learning another language that's not your native language, let's say it's Swahili or another language, Spanish, if you're a missionary or you're going to another place, it's also important for you to learn the emotional language words. I'll give you an example. And Bolton talks about feeling words in English. You know, affectionate, angry, annoyed, betrayed, blissful, blue, burdened, charmed. See, so you see these words. So when you're listening to someone, so that annoyed you. Oh, you're blissful, blue, burdened, charmed, cheated, cheerful, condemned, contented, crushed, defeated, despairing, distraught, disturbed, dominated, eager, empathetic, energetic, exasperated, fearful, flustered, foolish, frantic, guilty, grief-stricken, happy, helpful, high, horrible, hurt, hysterical, ignored, imposed upon, infuriated, intimidated, isolated, jealous, jumpy, peaceful, kind, left out, loving, melancholy, miserable, nervous, okay. Outraged, persecuted, pressured, put upon, rejected, relaxed, relieved, sad, satisfied, scared, shocked, spiteful, stunned, stupid, sympathetic, terse, terrible, thwarted, tired, trapped, troubled, vulnerable, wonderful. Now, again, these are a lot of words. But to a native English speaker, those words carry a lot of emotion. And sometimes, as a pastor, we might have a few emotions. Oh, you're feeling sad, and you're feeling glad, and you're feeling mad. You know, those are at one level fine. You know, guys, typically, if you're working with men, sometimes men will have five words all starting with M, mad, you know, or happy, or, you know, or sad, glad. They'll rhyme with the, like, sad, glad, mad, bad. You know, these are the type of things that happen. But these words mean a lot. And as you're growing in listening, you want to find those words. You develop a vocal empathy. Empathy is listening with your heart as well as your head. It's the reflection of another person's statement. If the reflection of another person's statement is made in cold, matter-of-fact tones, the person will seldom understand. On the other hand, responsive sounds by themselves can demonstrate a high level of understanding. Now, there's such a thing as called an emotion chart, where it has different levels of intensity, where feeling words are grouped according to levels of intensity. Words have slightly different meanings for different people. You may wish to move some words on the chart to a higher or lower level of intensity. In different parts of the country, different words mean different things. Most words, however, convey approximately the same degree of intensity to most people. So language usually is experienced pretty common across a language-speaking geographic area. The blank spaces, and I'm going to show you this in a minute, because I would like you to fill out your own language emotion chart. The blank spaces can be filled in with words that still are coming to mind. So here's this chart, and it might be difficult to see, but what we're talking about is the basic emotions: love, joy, strength, sadness, anger, fear, confusion, weakness. And you may put some ministry ones, you know, in there too, like, you know, doubt, you know, those type of things, or maybe some soul language, you know, worshipful. You know, these are, you might want to put them there and then add your own words. But anyway, to make it your own chart would be very helpful for you. And there might be levels of intensity, strong, mild, or weak. So you take these words and you put them into this chart. And I'd like to encourage you to do that. I mean, to really make your own chart if you've never done that. I've done this in the past. And this has been very helpful to me. If you're speaking English as a second language and need English as in ministry, this would be a very vital thing to do, because you could actually know what's basically thought of as a strong emotion, a mild emotion, or a weak emotion. But if you speak another language, you know these words and these levels of intensity, and it's very important to sort of know where they are. So when you're talking to someone, if you're feeling this, it's a very weak emotion, mild conversation, use weaker words. Don't use a strong word in a weak conversation. That will only say, oh, this person is making a mountain out of a molehill here. So these are important, because what you're doing is you want to strive for correctness and relevance. Much of the time when we opt to listen, the other person has a problem. The goal of listening in such a situation is to facilitate the speaker's effort to arrive at his own best solution for the problem. If a problem is discussed in vague generalities, or you don't match the emotional words, it is difficult, if not impossible, to solve it. Vague solutions to vague problems do not lead to effective action. And that's just one of the things that we notice in communication. So here are some techniques for clarity. Number one, make the conversations more concrete. Sometimes listeners give a vague response to very specific statements. Obviously, we try to at least match the speaker's level of concreteness in our responses. When a speaker is vague, however, the listener can reflect in a way that makes the conversation more concrete. So somebody might want to hide things, so they're a little bit vague. But maybe you sense that, and maybe the Holy Spirit's even helped you sense that, or you notice something that's been said. You can make the conversation more concrete in the use of some of these listening and emotional words. Number two, ask some questions to make the conversation more clear. Another way to foster concreteness in conversations is to ask a few fact-finding, feeling-finding questions. Could you give me an example? That's fact-finding. Or, how do you feel when she said that? So that's a feeling question, and you can get more clarity when you ask clarity questions. Here's something that seems a little bit counterintuitive. You know, we often talk about just let the person talk and everything. But there is a time when the person is just rambling, and the listener has to be aware of that. A third way to facilitate more concreteness in conversations is to prevent the speaker from rambling. That's what in English is somebody who just goes on, unfocused. When the speaker becomes long-winded, he undermines the concreteness, the purposefulness, the intensity of the interaction. If the listener punctuates the speaker's ramblings with nods, minimal encourages, we talked about that in previous sessions, and the like, he reinforces the fruitless rambling. Even when one is basically in a listening role, the conversation can be a purposeful dialogue. So as a listener, you want to stop that rambling. In order to respond frequently, It is sometimes necessary to interrupt the speaker. Many people find it ironic that good listening can be improved, and it can involve interrupting the person doing the talking. It is possible, however, the interrupted speaker's flow of words with a brief reflection without making the speaker lose his train of thought. So, for instance, somebody's going on, it's like, go back to that 28-year-old. So really, your mother is exerting a lot of control in your life, and this frustrates you. Get the person back to talk about what is the problem, what are they really feeling. So stopping the rambling is a good thing in ministry. Maybe you can do this by providing non-dogmatic but firm responses. There will be times, of course, Bolton says, when you are quite confused as to what the speaker meant. At those times, it's appropriate to say something like, I'm not sure what you meant, or was it this or was it that you meant to say? So part of what you're doing is trying to get clarity of thought. Having doing this, avoid the question landmine. Okay, what's that? Well, here's a sample from Bolton. So, and this happens in ministry where somebody talks something and then they like put it on you. Pastor, what do you think you would do if you were in my shoes? Well, here's a sample from Bolton. Sean says, I've thought about this a lot and I just don't know how to handle this situation. What would you do if you were in my shoes? Morris, and this is the way to keep the conversation. That one really got me stumped. Sean responds, it sure has. Maybe it's because it's the toughest thing I've ever faced in my life. No, you could go, Morris could say this. Well, if I were in your shoes, I would basically move to another place. Now what you have is the person asked a question. Morris, and as a pastor, we can sometimes take the bait of that. Start talking about, once when I was in this church, this happened, and we can get all this, and maybe you should. No. We want the person that we're listening to take responsibility. We want them to give their own self-revelation. The effective listener will occasionally tell the speaker some things about his own life. See, and that's what it is. If you answer it, you're still talking about your life. His self-disclosure, however, is not an end in itself. The other person, when the other person has a stronger need. Rather, it is related to the goal of this particular helping relationship. The listener needs to determine whether his disclosure is apt to help the speaker and understand himself more clearly. Okay, so go back to the person asks the question. To say, that really stumps me, I'll get the attention back. But what if the person keeps saying, what would you do, Pastor? Okay, now, we have an opportunity here to give a little bit. Well, I know this is hard because I went through this situation and it did not feel great. It truly is a difficult situation. So put it back to the speaker. So I understand that you really struggle with this, and I really want to keep praying for you in this as you're feeling offended or you're feeling hurt. Various words to keep the conversation going, that the person that you're talking to is taking responsibility. Now, sometimes in this whole process, there's possibly a confrontation. And as a pastor, we seek to serve the Lord. And sometimes we just need to share something that sort of tells the listener some truth. Now, this is to be very dicey, and Robert Bolton talks about this in People Skills. And this is sort of the conditions for a confrontation. First, a base of trust and understanding needs to be built. The base should be very firm before a confrontation is attempted. So as a pastor, you really have to know the person and somewhat. And there has to be trust. If someone does not follow your leadership, do not try to go for a confrontation. They're not going to be teachable usually. Second, the listener must perceive incongruities, which are essential to explore. In other words, you got a sense that the listener wants to be confronted wants to change. And finally, the listener should be confident that the speaker is ready and able to do the difficult task of exploring these discrepancies. Timing in a non-judgmental manner are very important factors in aiding the speaker to utilize the confrontation effectively. So there are times for confrontation, but when there is confrontation, know that you risk. And when you do confront someone, what I tend to do is really make sure that I'm not throwing in tons of things that must all change. That basically we're dealing with one thing at a time, one hurt at a time. And it's a very prayerful process. I want to go back to this idea of like when all of us take responsibility, why this is so important, why we don't want to fix it our solution or try to make it happen our way. The other person with the problem, the fact of the matter, has most of the data. No matter how effectively he or she discloses, and I listen, the other will have more data on their situation, his or her situation, than I could ever have. So number one is they have to take responsibility because they know their real anguish. It says in the Bible, no one knows the pain of someone else. Has. So I honestly don't know. No one knows the problems. The other person is going to be the one taking all the risks. If the solution isn't as good as it looked on the surface, the other must suffer the consequences. So if we just start giving solutions, the other takes all the risk. The other must implement the solution. We can't do it for someone or it won't be sustainable. The other's confidence and sense of self-responsibility are strengthened when he makes and implements his own solution. And the other and I both benefit when he becomes less dependent on me as the listener or helper, pastor, leader. So taking responsibility is a powerful road to change and grow their own depending upon the Lord. But there are always listener pitfalls. If the listener doesn't feel the force of the other person's anger, emotion, whatever, if he reflects without getting at least partially at the other frame of reference, he'll probably be creating more distance in the relationship. And Bolton calls this kind of cowardly listening, which has no place in genuine relationships. The fact is, called by God to be leaders, we are called to be engaged. But I want to sort of end this presentation with just a reality check. You are human. I am human. There is no reason that you have to actively listen to any person. As much as I love my wife, Bolton says, and want to present her, to be present for her as a listener, there are times when I am actually unwilling or unable to pay the price for empathetic listening. If she starts a heavy conversation at one of those times, I tell her I am not prepared to listen well right now. As a pastor, you're going to have some of those situations too where you just preached a sermon and you're sort of drained and then somebody all of a sudden, you know, drops a bomb or can't wait to talk to you and you're like sort of, whoa. It's okay to say, you know, you have a really valid feeling here and you know what, let's schedule a meeting or let's find a time to really talk about this because right now I'm sort of drained. And to be transparent about that. Because what happens sometimes is somebody comes to you and you're really half there. So you just half listen or you half deal with it. You are human. You know, maybe you need to mobilize more leaders or get more helpers on your empathetic listening team because you can't do it all. A lot of times as pastors or leaders, we're sort of like the listener, the problem solver. We can put ourselves in that role. But it really hurts those who are with us. We need help because we ultimately want people to come out of the bushes, come to the Lord more and more, and seek to be healed. And the whole process of communication is a gift from God to help us minister and be the church for one another.